Accession number 18259, Reel 5.
Ernie Gallantry, Reel 5.
Okay.
So you're doing your job at Chequers?
Yes. Yes. I just can't remember how long I was there at Chequers. We were with the holding battalion at that time at Regent's Park. And then we also go to Chequers for periods of doing guards on the Prime Minister's home, you see.
Any recollections of the VIPs?
Not really. No, I can't say. And from Chequers, it was from there that I volunteered to go on a draft to our 3rd Battalion, which were then, of course, in in the Western Desert. A few of us were asked to go. Well, asked to volunteer, and a few did, a few didn't. But I was one of those that volunteered to go. And from there, no then.
Why did you volunteer to?
Well, the reason being, I thought I was being a bit static, you know. Being at Chequers, we didn't think that we were sort of getting involved in any action. I think that was maybe one of the reasons. We knew very well that we would be going before so very long, because I think that was the object of us doing our training at the the invasion training. I think that was in readiness for us for the 2nd Battalion to invade it in Italy. But anyhow, I decided to do that, and that's what I did. And we went off then. I can't remember just where how many of us were there. There weren't a big group, and we went to, I think it was Greenock in Scotland, and I think that's from where we sailed for the Middle East. We sailed on a ship called the Louis Pasteur. It was a French ship that had been. I was led to understand that it hadn't been really completed because it was short of a funnel. I was always told, and it was a passenger ship, of course. But of course, it was converted and as a troop ship. And we went on this ship to the Middle East. Whilst we were aboard, it was our second occasion actually to try sleeping in hammocks, you know. And that's a real strange thing for landlubbers, is to to put hammocks up to. And of course, the first thing you got in at one side and you fell out at the other one, so we were really. Really proficient in setting them up. But then we went on to another deck and we were in bunks, so we were much better off than slinging your hammock up every night. And we slept in bunks there. And this journey to as I say, to the Middle East, we whilst it was on ship, we used to do quite a bit of training, you know, rifle training and we weren't firing live rounds, but we went through all the motions of that, you see. And we spent a lot of time playing cards and things like that. And I think one of our main games was the old housey-housey that they used to play very often at that time, the housey-housey game in the army. There was nothing really untoward occurred, I don't think, whilst we're travelling. I do know there's one poor unfortunate chap who died, and he had to be buried at sea. It's something that we, you know, really, not to feel upset, but we're really sad about it, really. And then we called at Cape Town, in Booth. Stayed in there for a couple of 3 days, I believe. And I always remember the civilian population coming to the dockside to welcome us into South Africa. Very hospitable people, you know. And they took us to the homes, and I can remember going to one or two of the homes and having meals with them, you know. And they're really, really very nice people. And they always said we could always see when this Louis Pasteur was coming in, because they used to be they had a good view of the quay and the ships coming in, the convoys, you see. So we always recognised the Louis Pasteur with its one funnel. It seems so strange to see it going along with just this. Really, seems if it wasn't, you know, it wasn't complete, and they could recognise that, you see. Now we went, called us another spot on the African coast, and we weren't allowed to go ashore, of course, at that day. I just think we went in there just for refueling or something, or other, taking vigils or something or other. But and I can always remember the natives coming round. We were on the deck looking over the water. The natives coming along, and it was a shark infested area. This little one, I can always remember. And there's these Negroes in these little boats coming along and begging, you know, and. Oh, they had stuff for sale, actually. They had, you know, coconuts and coconut fruit, whatever they said. But we were forbidden to take anything at all from them. So you know, that was something that we weren't allowed to do. So you must not take any food from these people, you see. And one phrase they had that amused me was they all shouted to us for Glasgow tanners. The only thing we can assume is that they've had these Scottish regiments going through there, you know? We used to do the same. We used to put a coin and a bit of silver paper and throw it, and they used to dive overboard into the water to retrieve this coin, you see. And they all used to be milling about around the around the ship. And and then from there we carried on, and we went into Port Tewfik in Africa, and that's where we there was the Bitter Lakes, if I remember, around there they call them the Bitter Lakes, at Port Tewfik, and it was there where we our battalion had the base camp, and we were met there by the Quartermaster and all these different people, and kitted up with what kit we needed, what we hadn't got with us. One thing that we did ditch straight away was we took these big topies, you know, the hats, and of course they weren't wanted at all. They were ditched straight away. And I remember going for a tour. I was done a tour. Taking on a guided tour around one of the villages where these Arabs were, and it was an eye opener for seeing it for the very first time, the way they all lived in these little shacks and the fires making the chapatis and the smell was something something horrible, but it really was, you know, it was an eye opener for some, you know. Very first time seeing anything like that. And then
who took you round the villages?
Well, the only thing I can think, it was some of our officers, you know, some I believe. See. And then the next thing I can remember about it is joining the battalion up the Bluey, as they called it, the desert, you know, up in the Bluey. And the battalion at that time, there must have been a bit of a rest period, because I can seem to remember going in. I met one of my Hull lads who had been in the 2nd Battalion with me at Aldershot. He's still on the go. And he was one of the first chaps I met. That's called Halliday, George Halliday. And I remember quite distinctly, you remember being in this sort of a naffy tent, drinking bottles of bottles of weak beer that they would get hold of. And then next thing I remember about it is going on. I was in the infantry section then with we were a motorised battalion. In fact, the brigade, 201st Guards Brigade, we were motorised, and those sections of us had these small 1500 weight trucks, and that's how we used to travel around the desert in these things, and all used to sleep on the night. We used to, because it used to get very cold at night, horribly cold, and we used to lay the big tarpaulin sheet alongside the truck at one side, and then along the floor, and then we all had bedrolls with our beds, blankets and things in, you see, and then we used to lay these side by side and get our heads down there and cover ourselves over with the remainder of this big tarpaulin sheet, because by the next morning it was really, really cold. Until then we used to stand to every morning at first light, and then of course the sun came up, and then it got hotter and hotter and hotter, and by midday of course it was really scorching hot, just different altogether. And I remember travelling about the desert in convoy with our in these trucks. For that particular purpose at that time, I just don't know what the object was. We may have been trying to find other columns for combat, I don't know. And then we went into what is known as Knightsbridge Box, because at that time the strategy was to have the infantry personnel in boxes, and there was a few along the line. There was this, we were in the one what's called Knightsbridge, and there were an area of, I think there would be approximately 4 square miles. And you were we did a lot of digging actually before we went in there, and that's what a lot of our time was taken up, digging the minefields. And around this box there was a terrific big minefield, and with gaps here and there, I don't know how many people called it, for you to get in and out of the box, you see. And inside the box we was all dug in different positions. We had the Royal Horse Artillery in there with the 25-pounder guns, and further along there was at Bir Hakeim there was another box which was occupied by the Free French, if I remember rightly. The distance between each, I don't know. There was another box further to our other side, and we were sort of the armour fought all around us, and there were times when we were absolutely surrounded by German armour and our own armour, all battling and fighting away, And we were in there for I think it was 17 days. We were in Knightsbridge Box altogether. And we used to get shelled and shelled and more shelled, and bombed by these Ju-88s, I think they were the Stuka bombers, Snag bombers. It used to go on relentlessly, and we used to wonder at the time, well, when is it going to stop? And
was there any infantry fighting?
There was little infantry fighting. It was more from a distance fighting, you see. I can't remember during my whilst I've been in France or in the desert. Shooting a person, shooting a German. I probably have done en masse when we've been firing at columns and things that's been going along, and at tanks when we on one occasion we had to, in fact there was two or three occasions we shifted because I was in the I was in the carriers by that time, excuse me, and we had all our vehicles in the box were all dug in with the nose down into the ground. You see, you have to dig, you have to pick it. The big pit, and you run your vehicle in, nose down, to prevent it any damage to the engine. And as I say, that's where we kept our vehicles. And it was called out two or three times to defend certain parts of the perimeter where attacks were coming in from. You see, mainly first of all by heavy armour, the German tanks, the Tigers, supported probably by infantry. You see. And we could see vehicles, and we used to take up these positions and engage them. But it was all from a distance, as I say.
Engage them with what?
All we had in our carriers was a Bren gun and a 2-inch anti-tank gun. That was as much as we had in our. In our carrier, you see, but there were other weapons. There was Portee trucks with I think they only had a 2-pounder gun on first off. I think they got a bigger gun on a bit later, but to start off when they already had about a 2-pounder gun, the same as what we had on the carriers, which well, they were just like pea shooters, really. Just like pea shooters, they were. We just felt that you just couldn't touch them. And as I say, this happened on two or three occasions. They were attempting to breach the get through the into the minefield. And then another job we were doing in there, which was the most exciting in my from my point of view, with the carriers. We used to go out with our carriers. Section of carriers, three carriers. We used to go out from time to time, or probably during a period with there over the 17 days, I would think we went out maybe about half a dozen times. We used to go out with an artillery officer. They used to be in armoured cars. And we were in our carriers. Well, of course, there were slow blooming things. They were in the desert, particularly compared to these armoured cars. And we used to go out and to find enemy columns. And our job was local protection for these. They were OPs, if you want to get me. These officers went out. They were observers. And we used to go out with them. And wherever they. We didn't know just where they were going, but we were briefed before in the evening that we had to meet this captain or major or whoever he was at this certain gap in the wire at first light, you see. And we used to go along there and meet this officer of Chappie, and then off we used to go through the tramping away through the desert, kicking all the dust up. And then we'd get to where, to our destination, where the OP point was, usually on the top of an escarpment. And then we'd give the halts a stop and get out and say, "Wrong, this is where we would do the observation from," you see. And then, of course, it's our job then to get dug in. That was one of your first things you did in the desert. Have you stopped anywhere for any length of time? Was get dug in and get your head down, because you guarantee you are going to get stukered or strafed by these the ME-109. You know, happened regularly on a daily basis. You And we used to dig in round this OP, put our camouflage nets over the vehicles, and then it was a question then of waiting to see what happened. And then of course he was in contact with the 25 pounders way back in the box, and then the next thing was of course they used to, and we used to watch and see the columns. They were some distance away, of course, you couldn't, and they were maybe just, they'd been laid up for the night or something like that, so you're ready for getting moving off somewhere else, these German columns. And then of course these OPs used to direct the fire from the, you know, from the 25 pounders to this column, you see. And then you could see the once the first few shells dropped and burst, you could see the, you know, confusion that was being caused. And this went on for until really you're fluffed to, because there were times when they found out that we, because the central, these we used to have the Lysanders in the army, what we used to call a West End bystander, was the old nickname for them, you know. The Lysander was the our spotter planes in the British Army. Well, they had a similar sort of thing, and it wasn't long on some of these jobs. We hadn't been there long before this one of these things would be buzzing about, you know, trying to locate our position, you see. And in fact we were located once or twice, and if we're not, we stayed until we'd done a good, you know, had a fair shoot at them, and then used to withdraw. These officers just used to drop the lid down on the on the turret, back off, and then off they would go. And they used to go like hell because they would travel a bit. And we used to go along in our carriers, chugging along there. And as I said, on one or two occasions, we were fluffed, so we got to quite a bit of, you know, stuff helping us on our way, you know, shelling and things like that. You know. And then we made our way back to the box, you see. And but we thought then, well, at least we're that used to having been on the, well, we don't want to be retreating, you don't retreat in the British Army, just you do tactical withdrawals. being on the receiving end all the time, we thought, well, when we were going out in it, it was, oh, this is something that at least we're going to have a go, you know, type of thing. And I'd say I think we made it about half a dozen times we did this, but there was one particular time. We got the usual, we used to have the conferences in the evening in our trenches, you know, the dugouts where our vehicles were. We would sleep with the vehicles. And then we had an officer commanding, Lloyd, I think his name was, Lieutenant Lloyd. And he used to go and get the brief, the, you know, the evening's briefing for what was that, and then he'd come and give us our instructions for the following morning what to do if we were going on these sorties. And one particular morning, we went, met the OP officer, as usual, at this particular exit from the box. And just outside, there was a squadron, is it, you can probably call them, I don't know, a troop or whatever, of the Queen's Bays Regiment. And they were, of course, one of the old horse regiments, the Queen's Bays Regiment. And we got to know, we didn't know until we were speaking to this chappy, so we had just having finishing the breakfast off after it was, you know, it's hardly light, it was just first light broke into. And the reason we were talking was because the officers, they met one another. They must have been good pals from way back, and had a lot to talk about. And they were talking and we were talking to them. And it's getting a bit late, we want to be on our way, we want to be in position before it gets too late, you know. And they were talking to these chappies, and it would seem that we that would just nicely got the General Grant tanks, the American General Grants, you know. And because they were telling us, they were talking about the tanks, and one of the things that they said about these tanks was that they were, where most of them, most tanks were made, they were welded, you know. A lot of these were riveted, plates was riveted on these tanks. This is what I can remember talking to them. And it would seem that if they got a hit, used to ricochet the sever these rivets inside, and used to shoot them up the inside of the tank like moving bullets, you know, which I think you could roughly imagine that happening. And that was one of the drawbacks with those tanks, that, from what I can remember about telling me. And anyhow, we'd been talking to him for what we thought was quite a long time. We were wanting these, you know, our office to get on his way. And then it got, well, it got point of no return, it got quite light. And then, lo and behold, there was such a hue and cry up. And there was a German column, only a very, very short way off them. And the Germans had seen and started open fire. And of course, the whole hue and cry went up, and they were all off into the positions. And went there with these bloody great tanks. And there was amongst them with our little carriers, you know. Oh, I said, it's my driver, that call sure. I said, back to the box, you know. And we made our way back to the box, and we didn't want to be involved among some great things, you know. And I think the artillery officer, I think he shot back as well, up the way, you know. That was a bit of a harrowing thing. And
what rank would you have had by then?
I was already a lance corporal at that time. So yes, we had a corporal in charge of it. I had a full corporal in a chap called Brooks, Sergeant Brooks. No, Corporal Brooks, I should say, as myself. And there was another young corporal. And we had another sergeant, Harrison, we had a sergeant with us, and another sergeant from Driffield, he was from, Holden, they called him, he's died since. And then, of course, there was another occasion whilst we were there, in the box. We used to get all this, you know, stuff coming in from all directions, bombing and shelling and one thing and that. And there was an observation post, which we were told at one of the conferences, not too very far away, that the Germans had been using to observe our movements, you see. And we had this conversation.